And thanks for listening. Opinions are those of the speakers, not necessarily shared by others in other units inside the station, and particularly the board of directors and foundation, etc. All right. Thanks for listening.
We're just Hello, folks. Welcome to another edition of the World Labor Hour, brought to you in the air and listener-supported community radio station WEFT, broadcasting at 90.1 FM from downtown Champaign, Illinois, and webcasting live worldwide at WEFT.org. The views and opinions you'll hear here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect those of the station manager, board of directors, or of Prairie Air Incorporated. Now here's Bob with some of our underwriting announcements.
This hour programming is brought to you in part by Central Illinois Jobs with Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Central Illinois Jobs with Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month. For more information or for the unemployed and underemployed hotline, give them a call at 217-328-2295. And programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the Illinois Education Association Union. The Illinois Education Association's mission is to effect excellence and equity in public education and to be the advocacy organization for all public education employees. And programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and Decatur attorney Bill Faber. He believes that the mission of the law is the safety of the people. Bill Faber proudly supports the World Labor Hour. And the Graduate Employees Organization Union, GEO, at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign strives to not only democratically represent graduate employees, but also to give solidarity and support to other unions, organizations, and workers engaged in the struggle for social justice both on and off campus. The GEO is proud to support the World Labor Hour on WEFT Community Radio, and the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois.
Okay, thank you, Bob. Well, we're going to be having a special guest here in the studio. It's coming up here about 20 after the hour. And he's a local Champaign-Urbana resident, and he's come on the air. He wants to talk a little bit about veterans issues. And, you know, we thought this is something we've kind of covered in the past a little bit, but it's been a while. So also, we're going to start on a semi-regular basis, having just some ordinary working people from Champaign-Urbana come on the air to kind of talk a little bit about their lives and, you know, some of the issues near and dear to their heart. You know, we'll have this in addition to our usual, you know, call-in guests from all across the country. So, you know, providing a little balance, you know, local and global as well. So, but anyway, first some news stories, and I guess we'll start with Bob.
Yeah, Dave, there was a couple little clips that Paul played about this book from Thomas Piketty. French dude, he wrote a book called Capital in the 21st Century. It's been translated out of French by Arthur Goldhammer. And it talks about income inequality, all kinds of things like that. And I thought it was interesting. This New Republic article that talks about the book pretty much sums up the theme of our show for the last 3 or 4 years. It talks about what's led to this income inequality. And it says that the discussion has so far has turned up a number of casual factors, including the erosion of the real minimum wage, the decay of labor unions and collective bargaining, globalization and intensified competition from low-wage workers in poor countries, technological changes and shifts in demand that eliminate mid-level jobs and leave the labor market polarized between the highly educated and skilled at the top and the mass of poorly educated and unskilled at the bottom. And those are issues we've been talking about here for number of years.
Indeed. But I might want to add to that there's a lot of very well-educated people out there, even some with PhDs that are working in minimum wage jobs.
Yes, yes.
And
exactly.
I think as of
sub-minimum wage.
Yeah. And as of a couple years ago, I don't know if it's still the case that of all different groups of people out there as far as their rate of unemployment, that college graduates had the highest rate of unemployment, even higher than that of somebody that never completed high school.
Veterans. I hear veterans have an awful high unemployment rate and stuff, too. Here's another indication indication of how this is going on. Postal workers around the country this week were protesting out in front of Staples stores on Thursday, objecting to the U.S. Postal Service's pilot program to open counters in stores staffed with retail employees. So rallies were held at like 50 locations in 27 states. In New York, about 100 workers marched from the main office on 8th Street to a Staples store about 5 blocks away carrying signs and chanting, "Hey, hey, ho, ho, Staples deal has got to go." In Washington, D.C., more than 200 people gathered at a Staples store, drumming on buckets and holding signs that read, "Stop Staples, the U.S. mail is not for sale." And essentially what people are saying here, it's a backdoor way of privatizing the post office. You know, it's taking away jobs from postal workers, and it seems as though they're doing whatever they can to break down the union, some of these people are saying. John Hegarty, president of the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, which represents about 45,000 mail handlers, said the outsourcing endangers the sanctity and security of mail. He says, "We're highly trained, skilled postal employees, and they want to give it to employees who really don't know anything about the mail." You know, just regular employees standing behind a counter at a Staples and stuff. Another Staples customer, John Lenzner in Washington, agreed that security was a concern. Says, "While the majority of postal workers are honest, it enlarges the pool of people who can take private personal information. You have, in essence, doubled the pool of people who can steal your mail, you know." And Mark Diamondstein, president of the American Postal Workers Union, called the Staples partnership a dirty deal. It represents a shift of good living wage jobs to low wage jobs.
With no benefits,
which is exactly what we're talking about. And that Piketty book talks about it, too, is, you know, they continue to take jobs away from people getting paid good money and giving them to people that are getting paid basically minimum wage, sometimes below minimum wage in these retail stores. And they're expecting these people to honor the sanctity of the U.S. postal mail and not steal people's checks or whatever else they could be putting in the mail at the Staples stores.
So, that's a very good point.
Yeah. Interesting. But it's a trend we've seen here for years in this country and other countries, you know.
Yes. And in fact, if we got time, I got a little mini article, if you will, about privatization, you know, which that'll definitely fit into. Okay. I got a couple real quick news stories. One is a class action lawsuit by tech workers against Apple, Google, Intel, and Adobe Systems is set to begin trial in May. The suit claims that the four tech companies conspired to keep pay down in the tech sector. The class action suit was filed in 2011, alleging that the companies conspired to avoid competing for each other's staff to avoid running up wages. Roughly 64,000 workers are part of the class action suit. If found guilty, the companies could face penalties of $3 billion or more. Well, we won't hold our breath on that one, but good they filed it. And then real quick, a local kind of related story. Patterson Office Supplies in Champaign, a part of Patterson Dental Supplies of St. Paul, Minnesota, laid off 16 full-time employees on April 24th, one plant manager, one floor manager, and 14 production and other staff, most of which had 20 to 40 years of service. In the last 9 years, there's been one other layoff, which took 10% of the workforce. They have also taken a 4% reduction in pay. Recently, it was announced that the company had made $1 billion in profit in the last quarter. And that story came from an anonymous phone call I received yesterday, actually.
Interesting.
Yes. Yeah. It was assigned basically the person just said, I'm a fan of the Labor Hour, and I want this information to get out. So we encourage more people to do that, please.
Yeah, yeah. Or if you want to go on the air.
I offered that, of course, but no, that was out of the question, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I got another story we can talk about. We've talked about a little bit in the past. Yesterday was the historic vote where Northwestern football players cast their secret ballots on whether to form the nation's first union for college athletics. It says it's a decision that could change the landscape of American amateur sports. And so the results will be closely watched, although they won't be known for some time. It says after two rounds of voting on a 19,000-student campus, the ballot boxes were sealed. They'll remain so for weeks, months, perhaps even years, as the university challenges the effort to unionize the team, you know. Says here, we're one step closer to a world where college athletes are not stuck with sports-related medical bills, do not lose their scholarships when they are injured, are not subject to unnecessary brain trauma, are given better opportunities to complete their degrees. This was from former Northwestern quarterback Kane Coulter, who helped lead the effort to unionize the people with the efforts of the United Steelworkers and a kind of a athlete group and stuff, you know. Supporters say a union would help the athletes obtain better compensation, medical care for injuries, and other benefits. Over one day before the vote, the NCAA endorsed a plan that would give big schools like Northwestern much more autonomy to address such issues for its athletes. So things are changing, even if this vote doesn't go through.
Mm-hmm.
It says here that 76 scholarship football players were eligible to cast their ballots. The rules under which the ballots were impounded don't even allow them to be counted, so it's not actually known how many will actually vote, you know. So Jim Phillips, vice president for athletics and recreation at Northwestern, said in a statement, the school strongly believes in these issues that have been raised and has been a leader in several of these areas, including awarding four-year scholarships and providing extended medical benefits. However, Ramoji Huma, he's a former UCLA linebacker, he's accused the university of using scare tactics to thwart the effort. Northwestern sent a 21-page question and answer document to the players outlining the problems it sees with forming a union. In it, Northwestern said it hoped unionization would not lead to player strikes in the event of a dispute, but if it did, replacement players could be brought in to cross the picket line.
Ouch.
You know, but interesting things are happening because some legislators in Ohio and Connecticut are passing some rules as to what can and can't happen now on these college campuses. I also came across something that says that the first practice after Peter Orr's NLRB March ruling that declared college football players university employees, each Northwestern football player mysteriously received a free iPad. So things are changing whether this vote goes through or not. You know, the university are maybe wising up that they got to treat these people a little bit better sometimes, mm-hmm. you know. Give them a four-year scholarship. Some of these kids come to school, get injured their first year, and they take their scholarship away, and then they're not paying them for their medical bills, and, you know, not to mention some of the brain trauma things and stuff. So interesting how that can play out.
Indeed, indeed. Okay, we're going to take a quick music break, and then we're going to be right back with our guests. So you're listening to the World Labor Hour on listener-supported community radio station WFT in Champaign, Illinois. Stay tuned.
State line. Men and boys were digging coal deep down in the Kentucky mine. All day they never see the sun. All night they love moonshine run. Never give a thought to carry a gun. Just do it, baby, it's gotta be done.
They got some women in a four room shack. If you even wanna call it back, you can hear the train through the cracks when you're living on the tracks.
Bloody Heart of 1935. When the Union made the call, those who stood paid the price. They talk about a dreadful night, a miner killed in 29. They call that Caleb's Light, just a lost soul in the mind.
They got you living in a four-room shack. If you even want to call it back, you can hear the train through the cracks.
Okay, that was a song called Wildcat Whistle by Scott Miller and the Commonwealth. And I want to thank whoever provided that to us. We found that in our mailbox. And anyway, it's a really good tune and everything. We thought we'd share it with you. So anyway, we're here now with our special guest, Mark Hackett. Mark, welcome to the World Labor Hour.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Mark, you know, we've worked together in the past on some jobs, and we had to run into each other the other day, and I said we had an opening this Saturday, and I thought it'd be great to have you on, kind of talk about some of your experiences in general, but in particular, you said you wanted to talk about Veterans Affairs, since you are a veteran.
Yeah, it's, you know, I've been in and out of the veteran system over in Danville and Tomah, Wisconsin since 1999, and God bless them. I mean, the VA health system has done a turnaround in the last decade or so that's been pretty amazing. I'd put them up against pretty much anybody as far as health care quality.
Good.
And the support staff, the nurses and things like that are, man, some of the best I've ever dealt with. So, I mean, it's starting to come around. There's still some gaping holes in the healthcare system, but they're getting overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've got... Are we out of I don't even think we're out of Afghanistan.
No, you know, and we're really not out of... Well, Iraq, there's a lot of private mercenaries there. And
yeah, I know there's a lot of stuff still going on, mm-hmm. and I suspect we're never going to be out of there. I served in the military from 1973 to 1975, and theoretically the war in Vietnam was over by then. But as you recall, Saigon didn't fall until 1975.
April 75, I remember it so well because that was I graduated high school about a month later.
Which, oddly enough, is the month I got out, and a lot of people did. They they pushed through a Chapter 13 program, I believe they called it, where they're offering everybody a general discharge that was a draftee, a malcontent, wanted to get out, mm-hmm. whatever. They saw the fall of Saigon as, okay, this thing is literally over now. And I was a combat engineer,
mm-hmm.
which is a pretty critical MOS, MOS being the type of job you do.
Mm-hmm.
But they said, we can get by without these guys. So I took the opportunity. I was a kid, man. I was 16.
What does a combat engineer do exactly?
Well, heavy equipment, building, blowing up things.
Oh, blowing up things, too. Okay, that's probably fun.
Yeah. you get to the old dig a foxhole days are gone. You just put these gumdrop charges on the ground in series, man, just go poof.
Oh, really? Okay.
And it blows six foxholes out there.
Wow.
Okay.
We built bridges. Mm-hmm. We set up landing strips. And basically, we were the first in and last out in a lot of situations.
Oh, wow.
On base situations. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. So it was pretty interesting. I mean, that's where I learned most of my construction trades.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a terrible soldier, but I learned a lot of things from the military that I carry to this day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a work ethic and a sense of discipline, although my friends will tell me, yeah, right.
Oh, we can all be accused guilty of that.
Yeah. But no, I mean, it really had an impact on me, mm-hmm. on my perspective and my viewpoint. And I think a lot of good men and women are being wasted in society. Because they're not given an opportunity, man, to use their strength and
mm-hmm.
their
skills and stuff.
Their skills and mm-hmm. whatnot to really mm-hmm. get out there. It's I've heard some horror stories that a couple of years ago there was a gentleman, and I think I've got this right, it was a News Gazette article, but he'd gotten hit by an improvised explosive device. And blew up real good. Mm. He was a mess, man. Mm-hmm. He had shrapnel in his chest and stuff like that. And they have what they call 100% service connected. That means you're basically unable to work ever again. But with that comes a nice stipend.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, you get educational benefits for you and your family so that you can try and retrain and do something within the scope of your disability. And you drop that 10% to 90%, it's a substantial cut in wage, man. It's like $1,000, and you lose the educational benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, they're going round and round with the government over his 100%. And, you know, the Social Security Disability Department, the VA, has lawyers that try and find loopholes, try and find... and I suspect they're given bonuses if they,
I'm sure.
Denial. I can't prove that for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But this went round and round, and fortunately, it caught the ear of Tim Johnson. And Tim Johnson, as I understand, has been a big advocate for mm-hmm. veterans' rights. And within a couple of weeks, this guy had his 100% as he was entitled to. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, this, you know, this guy had, because I was telling somebody earlier, Dave, the combat injuries received now, and I'm getting this secondhand from guys that have been there, and just from my own research, the combat injuries now would have killed Vietnam veterans in combat.
So there's more survival for
there's
wounded.
There's a higher survival rate, but it leads to more disabilities, more prosthetics, more long-term care, and more family. You know, if you had your legs blown off in Vietnam, you'd probably bleed out.
Mm-hmm.
There's kind of a funny story that I don't know who started it and when, but some soldier asked his sister for tampons in his next care package. And that would seem an odd request.
Yeah.
And this is a while back, but if you stick one in a bullet hole, it expands and it stops the bleeding. And now they have something similar to that.
Okay.
In the aid kits. And that was, from what I understand, was, you know, that's a big problem in any kind of combat situation is guys bleed out.
Yeah.
And to all my brothers and sisters out there, I wasn't in combat, so I'm just speaking from what you've told me.
Okay.
So.
Well, you kind of lucked out then. I mean, 73, 75, the war in Vietnam was winding down, but there was, I think the last soldier killed was actually on the last day of the pullout, you know?
Yeah. We were on the tarmac. I served my time at Fort Ord, California, which was a nice tour of duty,
okay.
I might add. I mean, as far as the state.
Mm-hmm.
But we were on the tarmac in full gear in 1974, and I thought, oh, no, this is it.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I was 16. I was...
Oh, you went in young then, okay.
Yeah, I was struggling in high school, and it was one of those deals back then, go to jail or go to the Army.
Oh, I heard a lot about those.
Yeah. And, you know, I didn't know what to do with myself, so I joined the Army and turned 17 and went in. And I was still 17 that summer. We were sitting on the tarmac when I got out. I was only 18. Wow. And I tell you what, man, I had no clue. Man, I really didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Was one of my discomforts is that I didn't go into combat, and I talked to guys that had been in combat, and I said, I don't know how I can stand next to you, man, because you've done this thing. And, you know, I've had some good guys tell me, man, were you willing to go into combat? Well, yeah, that's, you know, that's why I went there, man.
Right.
I didn't want to get shot. I've always told my daughter, I'll take a bullet for you. But please don't. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to, but, you know, I was too young to understand the politics of Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And all I understood was this was my job. This is what I was supposed to do. And somewhere under there was a 17-year-old's understanding of your patriotic duty. You know, my family history goes back to, you know, civil wars and American revolutions and stuff like that.
Oh, wow. Uh-huh.
So, I mean, I've got a brother's historian, and my daughter's doing the thing, too. So, yeah, there's a good family history of community service going back there. But, you know, it was a real eye-opener when I got into the VA system. I struggled for a lot of years. I was, I'm a recovered substance abuser.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go with that. You know, I'm going to put myself out here because it's not like anybody that knows me doesn't know.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, I suffer from bipolar type 1, and I wasn't aware of that for years and years and years. I went into a substance abuse rehabilitation program at Danville that is not a 12-step program, oddly enough. The Dr. Jeff DeBoard that teaches that uses Albert Ellis's RET, Rational Emotive Therapy. And it's very effective if you use it. I mean, basically, it's, you know, it's a way of changing your thinking very fast on, you know, something happens, how do you normally behave, and what are the consequences, and you just kind of rewrite the script there.
Okay.
Wow.
And that's worked very effectively for me. Oh, you know, it might be cool to have a drink right now. Nah, wait a minute. Where'd this take me in the past? Or it might... You know, I'm really mad at my boss, so I think I'm just going to go in the office and slug him. Yeah, okay, where'd that get you? Yeah, unemployed for a long time.
Yeah.
So it's a very effective tool, but he was the one that pointed out, man, your textbook bipolar, Mark. the VA has given me the medications necessary to get that under control.
Mm-hmm.
And I did some research, and it'd be about $700 a month
for
those meds.
Yeah.
And take this, and you know we're going to talk about the veterans out there, man. Mm-hmm. Take this, and the veterans with mental issues that are out on the street. I was out on the street on and off for a good 10 years, man. And
wow.
I'd have to beg my sister, who was a nurse sometimes, to find me some anti-Paxil was what I was taking at the time. You know, she'd find some samples and whatnot and get them to me. And she didn't understand that you can't withdraw from these things without having some serious side effects like seizures and things like that.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And a lot of guys will self-medicate. I did.
Mm-hmm.
So the picture you're getting is pretty complicated of the guys that are out there
mm-hmm.
that are still struggling with stuff. And the guys that have a home and whatnot. I mean, it, as with any human being, man, it's not that simple, man.
Well, it sounds like thank God for the VA in your case and other cases.
Yeah,
you know.
Man, I'm a big supporter of the VA. Mm-hmm. We had personnel issues initially. The directorship in Danville has come a long way. The last couple of directors, national directors, have been just outstanding. And they started to prioritize. I'm one of the lucky veterans who... they have basically a wartime pension. It's called a non-service connection and a compensation. And I qualified for that because I was Vietnam era. But I've got several physical issues. And those were kind of keeping me from working. They were kind of keeping me from doing some other things. And due to the fact I was living in a homeless shelter, they kind of fast-tracked at me for me. And you know, there's options that... I'm hoping this isn't the end of the line for me. I'm sorry. I'm 57 years old, but we're gonna see what happens here. And you know, I'm using it to my benefit, mm-hmm. man. But you know, I don't have numbers. Like I said earlier, mm-hmm. I wish I had numbers.
But you've talked to other veterans and stuff, right?
I've talked to other veterans, and I kind of crunched some numbers from BFW magazines, mm-hmm. and from Historian magazines, and whatnot. I think the largest contingent of military was the Civil War, probably 30-40%.
As far as casualty?
Well, as far as people participating.
Oh, participating. Okay, as far as...
Even World War II wasn't that big.
Okay.
But right now, as I understand it, we're looking at a standing military of about 500,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the population of the United States? What is
300 million?
300 million, 300, yeah.
350.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, you got less
than
1%.
Yeah.
Serving in the military. And doesn't it behoove us to extend every olive branch and every service we possibly can to these men and women that are willing to put their lives on the line.
Yes.
I mean, for whatever reason, they're doing their thing. The bottom line is if they get called up in combat, they either go or they go to Leavenworth.
Yes, indeed. Well, we're going to take a quick music break here, and we're going to be right back with our guest, Mark Hackett. You're listening to the World Labor Hour on listener-supported community station WFT in Champaign, Illinois. Stay tuned. Okay, that was local blues band Kilbourn Alley doing Nothing Left to Stimulate. And now we're going to do some quick public service announcements. A performance of A Day at Statesville on May 9th at the Universalist Unitarian Church on Green Street from 6:30 to 8:30. A Day at Statesville, a play detailing newcomers' first day at Stateville Correctional Facility in Joliet, Illinois. This reader's theater was conceived and written by inmates who took the prison's life transformation through communication course, all of whom have life sentences without parole. It seeks to inspire community members to take action to reduce the number of at-risk youth entering prisons and to advocate for the improvement of prison conditions. Former prisoners throughout Chicago perform the play in the form of theatrical reading. Performances are followed by facilitated discussions with the audience. And that's on May 9th from 6:30 to 8:30 at the Universalist Unitarian Church on Green Street in Urbana. And tune in today and every Saturday from 2 to 3 for None Other Sports Show with fellow worker Neil Parthen. That's at 104.5 FM WRFU and broadcast Wednesday evenings from 6 to 7 p.m. on Urbana Public Television, Comcast Channel 6. Also tune in to Urbana Public Television, Comcast 6 on this Sunday and every Sunday from 4 to 5 p.m. for Labor's World View TV. And occupiers and peaceful people, here's a call to demonstrate on a local environmental issue on Tuesday evening, May 13th at the Hilton Gardens Inn in Champaign. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency will hold a public hearing on the question of whether they should grant, quote, sole source aquifer protection to the Mahomet Aquifer. We should be out in the sidewalks to greet them to show the Environmental Protection Agency that, yes, we do want them to protect the aquifer that provides drinking water for much of central Illinois, including Champaign-Urbana, and we should take part in the hearing, too. We'll gather at about 5:30, 5:45 in front of the Hilton Gardens, and that's on the corner of Kirby, and it's on Kirby between Neal and State Street. So, and at 6:30, they're going to go inside the hotel and actually be part of the EPA hearing. So tune out for that, too. And Bob, you got something too about a special event going on this evening?
Yeah, you played that tune by Kilbourn Alley, and they're going to be celebrating their 14th anniversary party this evening at the Iron Post, starting at 9 o'clock over there in Urbana on 120 South Race Street. They got a special guest, Jackie Scott. She normally plays with Jackie Scott and the House Wreckers out in Virginia, Hampton Roads, Virginia. And she's a great vocalist. She's flying into town to help celebrate the 14th anniversary party going on tonight with Kilbourn Alley. And that show's kind of being sponsored by Prairie Crossroads Blues Society. That's a local group of people. It's a not-for-profit. Their mission is to preserve, promote, and educate people about the blues. And besides the show tonight with Kilbourn Alley and Jackie Scott, they also got another show coming up. May 18th, they're going to have a newly signed to Alligator Records recording artist, Jerika Singleton, coming in to play up at Memphis on Main. So, that's happening on a Sunday. So Prairie Crossroads Blues Society does a lot of great things around here to, like I say, preserve, promote, and educate people. They got a program going on right now at Don Moyer's Boys and Girls Clubs to teach some kids there about blues history and teaching them a little bit of basic harmonica instruction.
Oh,
they've been
great.
Distributing some free harmonicas to the kids and teaching them some stuff about the blues.
Good deal. And we can thank you as part of the people that founded the Crossroads Blues Society. So I'll tell you, for a town this size, I mean, we've got, and it seems like nationwide too, that blues is a music genre that's really making a comeback here. It's been making a comeback for quite a few years, really.
Yeah, and in some respects, it's maybe underappreciated here in the States. You go over to Europe and stuff, and some of the blues stars that we barely know around here are big, huge stars over there in Europe, and sometimes they maybe appreciate the whole history of the blues more than we do. If you go to the Delta area, where you said you'd be going in a couple of weeks here, you'll run into people there from Germany and Sweden and all over the world, and they come to study the blues. You know, the history, the oppression that the people went through in the Delta areas, the slavery, the sharecropping, and, you know, it's got quite a interesting history in the blues, besides some of the myths that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, the crossroads.
There's some real truth to that, and there you can understand why people had the blues, you know. They had some hard lives that people lived through, and
a real
oppression. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're back with our guest, Mark Hackett. Mark, tell me about some of the issues that a lot of, let's put it this way, adversity that a lot of veterans are facing. I mean, just basically of veterans, some of your fellow veterans you've talked to over the years.
Dave, one of the things that is just typical is lack of information Time is so hard for some of these veterans to get what they need and what they've been promised because the bureaucracy is so thick.
Mm-hmm.
You've got disabled veterans that, I talked to one Vietnam veteran, a very successful man, and he felt that maybe these guys coming back that are broken were broken before, and I suspect that's not really the case. And the bottom line to me is it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
It really doesn't. Mm-hmm. Are we willing to lose one?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's what makes us a society. It's what
should make
us a civilization. We take care of our most infirm. We take care of our weakest, man, and bring them up so that they can take care of us. I went through under the GI Bill back in the 80s, and mm-hmm. that was pretty cut and dried. My brother was under a different program these guys are going through now. They keep changing it up,
mm-hmm.
and it seems to be a pork barrel deal, man, because a lot of money will go into that pot, and then it sort of disappears.
But yeah.
The biggest thing that I ran into, I did not know that I had a veteran's health care available to me. Nobody told me that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of stuff they don't tell you. I don't know how it is now, but when they cut us loose back in the 70s, they literally cut you loose, man. There were guys that come from Vietnam in country on a Saturday afternoon and Sunday afternoon. They're in a bar in San Francisco drunk and about to collect their first felony for assault and battery, more than likely.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that many times. They spend six weeks training you in boot camp, and then they don't spend even 20 minutes on the way out the door.
I understood from a guy I worked with that he was in SEAL training and whatnot,
mm-hmm.
That they spend 6 months re-civilizing you, I suppose you say. But I've talked to some other guys that said, yeah, it doesn't work. And I've run into guys in meetings, groups that I've had and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And it really depends on the individual. I tell you what, man, it took me years to finally accept the bipolar situation. Mm-hmm. And it took me years to accept. I needed the non-service-connected disability because I couldn't get Social Security disability. I wasn't broken enough. I couldn't get out of bed. I got degenerative disc disease. I wasn't broke enough. I could take a lesser job. I said, man, I've been an iron worker, construction worker my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. You know, I don't even know how to use a computer.
Mm-hmm.
So what am I supposed to do? What kind of retraining are you going to give me? Well, you have to sign up for this and go over there. Mm-hmm. Man, lady, sir, I can barely get out of bed here. Help mm-hmm. me out. Just give me a hand up. So, you know, but I struggled with it
mm-hmm.
because I don't want to take anything that I – and a lot of veterans took me aside and said, you earned it, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, take it. You earned it. Just do right with
mm-hmm.
it. And with that comes a responsibility, man, to get it out there and say, hey, you know, let's take a look at what we can do. The homeless situation is bad enough, but mm-hmm. I have to stay on focus. I have to stay on point
mm-hmm.
and kind of focus mine on the veterans that I know.
Yeah.
Because there's a tie in there.
I've heard, and probably you have too, Bob, that a large percentage of the homeless people that are out there now in, you know, all over the country, you know, are veterans right. from Iraq and Afghanistan, as well recent ones, as well as some still from the Vietnam era, you know.
We're dying off real quick from Vietnam era,
mm-hmm.
and that's I ran into a guy that used to be on camps, little guy, just sweetheart, man. Hi, how are you? And you know, my daughter would give him orange juice and a sandwich every morning. I'd give him a couple of bucks so he'd get his drink. I saw him one day on the street, and I said, yeah, my daughter just turned 26. He said, wow, I had a birthday yesterday, and now I'm 55. He was dead within 6 weeks from exposure. I thought the dude was 70, man. Mm. I really did. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God, Nicole. This is, that's life on the street. So it's hard. A guy I work with kind of pointed out, man, you know, it's rare that you see too many veterans panhandling out there. They're trying to find some work and whatnot. And there was a sense of self-reliance and dedication. Mm-hmm. You never see, you know, I've heard, well, you never see a Marine out there. They take care of each other.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a bond there. You know, I don't know, but yeah, there's a sense of self-appreciation and a sense that you really kind of need to do this thing on your own, which keeps them out there for a long time. They're not willing to take. And then the other end of it is they get in a system they don't want to get out. You get institutionalized. It's too easy, man. And I'm fortunate that I jumped in and out and been kind of a butthead to the people that tried to help me, but it's always been with a passion for self maintenance, you know, self that I can move forward in a direction I was comfortable with and see where my life experiences could develop a unique individual that is me. And so it was kind of fun. But yeah, I'd say the biggest problem we've got is bureaucracy and lack of information. A lot of guys don't know. You know, I knew about the GI Bill, but I didn't know about the medication. I mean, I could have probably, if I'd known about it in the 80s, when I was still in my 20s, man, I could have very well gotten the help I needed and gotten through college and been in a real different place right now.
Yeah, and I heard a lot of the problems that the VA does have is also, you know, due to underfunding, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
And then there's the thing about, you know, recent years with the Iraq and Afghanistan veterans is that these young men and women are enticed to sign up with promises of, you know, education scholarships and stuff, and then when they get out, all of a sudden, they find all these loopholes, and you've heard
I've heard a lot about that. I haven't done a lot of research, but I've just heard, you know,
through the grapevine
around the smoke and barrel horror stories. And yeah, you'll sign up for this, and then the military can pretty much do whatever they want with you once you sign up.
I mean, they own you basically.
They do. They literally own you. I mean, you're a piece of property.
I heard a story about a guy that was in the military that on the weekend. He got really badly sunburned from being on the boat, and he came back and said that he couldn't show up for duty, and I guess they put him in the stockade for 3 days. And he says, for what? He goes, willful damage to government property. You. I mean, that was the weirdest story I ever heard.
That's one of those urban myths or not. But it's certainly within the purview of what the VA can do or the military can do. So a lot of these guys are coming back and they think they're throwing a lot of money at them. You get 23, 24-year-old people. And you throw them $50,000, they go out and buy a new car. And they got this, that, and the other. Woohoo, we're ready to rock and roll. And they get out and they find out, well, it's not sustainable. You've just signed up for another 6-year tour. And they're getting called back and over. One thing about the conflict in Vietnam is you pretty much had a tour that was a finite. You know,
time limit, time frame.
So you kind of, you know, you could kind of count your days, and you know, one day and a wake up, and I'm back home. And these guys don't have a chance to.
Serving. And it's got to be 6 and 8 tours of duty and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's got to be destroying families. And can you imagine how you would feel? It's like I've had enough, but you can't do anything about it.
Yeah, there's a term for that, and I can't think of off the top of my head what it's called. You know, about where they, you know, they can recall you, you know, at will and everything. And anyway, but Mark, I want to also talk about something you just introduced me to here recently. And that's an article in the issue of Rolling Stones from February of last year in 2013, an article called Too Big to Jail. HSBC Bank broke every law in the book, but its executives got to walk away in a case that may change American justice forever. And this is by Matt Taibbi, who writes a lot of good articles for Rolling Stones. And, you know, I've gotten about only a third of the way through this article, but it's like, oh my God, I mean, this is incredible. And I want to thank you for that. And, you know, I think we're going to, sometime maybe here in the future, we got to do a program on all, you know, this the banksters, you know, gangster banksters.
I'd really suggest finishing that whole article because I read it and I was really aghast, man. I mean, you see this stuff in movies and whatnot, and you go, no, come on, man. It can't really, Mr. Big can't really be that big. But as it turns out, that is the case. And, I'm really a big fan of the Occupy movement now because I understand what they're seeing. I mean, these guys are just getting away literally with murder.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indirectly. Yes.
And directly and indirectly. Yeah. And they're murdering the economy. They're murdering the working class.
Yes.
You know, you talk about unemployed vets, man. Well, you know, you get into a situation where you're used to a certain program, and it's a lot, 90% boredom and 10%, you know, let's go. And you get these guys that are pretty high strung as somebody comes up and tells you something that, you know, you obviously knew and you know, pokes you. You know, you don't poke a tiger. A lot of these guys get poked and they lose, you know, they lose their jobs because they just don't have the resources to understand how to reintegrate. So, you know, some of them will sign up again. Some of them can. Suicide's a big deal, right?
Yeah, it's an economic numbers. Draft now, as opposed to the actual, you know, outright draft, you know, back in the Vietnam era. And so it's mainly, you know, poor and working class who are going to fight the wars, you know, from the inner cities, from Appalachia, from rural America, you know, even some undocumented young men and women that are promised citizenship once they, you know, they sign up and stuff. And, you know, it's just, you know, and these politicians, you know, I mean, this is the thing that really gets me about soldiers is I admire so much their courage and what a lot of them had to go through, you know, and stuff. It's just these damn politicians that create these problems to begin with, that put these young men and women, working class men and women, into harm's way, going and you know, basically for, you know, to not secure our freedoms, but to basically secure the freedoms of companies like HSBC to basically rape and plunder economically, you know. And that's just really horrible because, you know, I guess you could say in a nutshell, you admire the warrior, but not the war, you know.
Yeah, and, it's to paraphrase what is the statue, give us your poor, your hungry, your huddled masses, we'll put them in uniform and send them to Afghanistan.
Oh, I never heard that one. That's a good one, Mark.
I just made that up.
Oh, well, that's great. That's a good one. Okay, well, thank you so much for coming in the show.
And my pleasure, man.
Okay, and we want to give you a little more Kilbourne Alley here, and then we'll be right back. So stay tuned. You listen to the World Labor Hour on listener-supported community radio station WFT in Champaign, Illinois.
Blue.
Okay, this is the World Labor Hour back on the air. That was Kilbourne Alley with the song Blues Dudes, and you can check them.
That was Jackie Scott.
That was Jackie Scott.
Who's the special guest with Kilbourne Alley.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
And she's guest vocalist there on a CD. Eddie Shaw and the 757 All-Stars.
Okay.
She produced that CD, and then she's singing vocals on that track. So
well, thanks for that correction,
that's
Bob.
Jackie Scott.
Okay. Yeah, boy, she's got a great voice, and you can see her tonight at the Iron Post in the band. At what time?
Yep. 9 o'clock. They're going to get started over there celebrating Kilbourne Alley's 14th anniversary party. So
okay, well, it sounds like it'd be a great event to turn out to and everything. And man, she sounds really talented. You know.
Yeah.
And so is Kilbourne Alley going to be playing with her along with her? Okay.
Yeah. Okay. It's Kilbourne Alley's 14th anniversary party, so they're playing. They'll be the star of the show. Well, like Jackie will be the star of the show, but they'll play the first set, and then they'll probably get Jackie up there sing some vocals in the second set with her.
Okay, very good, very good. Okay, I guess you've been listening to the World Labor Hour, and I hope you enjoyed that segment today. We would like to do that every once in a while here, and if you'd like to come on the air, give me or Bob a call. My phone number is 721-0583, and feel free to call, and we'd love to you got an interesting story and some issues that are labor related, we'd love to have you on sometime, so keep that in mind. So
I did have one thing I wanted to mention. Did you notice earlier this week that the UAW dropped their appeal against the VW?
Are you kidding?
Vote down there?
No.
And everybody was kind of wondering why they did that.
Yeah.
One of the reasons was they were subpoenaing three people there.
Yeah.
Tennessee Governor Bill Haslam, U.S. Senator Bob Corker from Tennessee. And this article calls him Washington small government activist Grover Norquist. And they all said that they were going to ignore the subpoenas to attend the hearing. So after that, I guess the UAW figured there's no reason to even have this hearing. But there's more to this story that keeps coming out. Apparently, for months, the state of Tennessee had been promising VW $300 million in tax incentives. And then just a week or two before they had to vote down there in Tennessee, they withdrew that offer to Volkswagen and stuff. And now they're apparently going back to VW and saying, well, they're maybe think about renegotiating that and stuff. But there's more and more some of the sneaky undercurrent things that were going on down there in that VW vote. But in any event, the UAW did drop their appeal to challenge that vote. And I guess they're going to maybe change their focus and focus on that Mississippi plant down there, the Nissan plant down by Jackson, Mississippi, and maybe Daimler Chrysler or Daimler Benz plant down there in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. But, interesting. A lot of people are kind of scratching their heads. Apparently, they did it an hour before the hearing started, and some of the witnesses and stuff from the union weren't even aware they were standing outside the courtroom waiting to go in, and they didn't even tell them, the UAW, that they were dropping this appeal and stuff. But
yeah, we got to get Mike Griffin. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, part of it. I mean, I find it just amazing that those people, the governor, Bill Haslam, Corker, the senator, and Grover Norquist would say they're going to refuse to honor the subpoenas and go testify.
But if we did that, we'd be in jail.
Who do these people think they are?
Above the law?
Evidently.
There's one set of laws for. I mean, this is what this country's come to, among other bad things, is that it's come to a point to where we have a system of one set of laws for regular working people. And one set of laws for the oligarchy,
elite.
The elite, yes,
1%,
yes,